This episode of At the Eyepiece is sponsored in part by Audible.com. To receive a special offer just for our listeners, head on over to audibletrial.com/at the eyepiece to claim your 30-day trial plus one free audiobook download. Welcome to the At the Eyepiece Show. This is an astronomy-based podcast that is devoted to discussing astronomical equipment, stargazing tips, observing reports, and equipment reviews. We don't focus on the science of astronomy. There are plenty of shows that do that. The focus of At the Eyepiece is the visual observers, those backyard stargazers that enjoy taking their telescopes under the stars, and those individuals wishing to join our ranks. After all, what matters to stargazers is what's at the eyepiece. Well, hello out there, my fellow backyard stargazers, and welcome to this episode of At the Eyepiece. I know it has been a while. Looking forward, though, to get back at the microphone, if you will, and get some more podcasts cranking out. And it's just been so busy. You know I keep saying that every few episodes, but I really am trying to make an effort to go ahead and get on here because, you know, there's a lot of great folks out there that are sending me emails and sending me messages and mentioning it on Night Skies Network and saying, hey, you know, it's been a while since you've done the podcast, man. We kind of miss it. What's going on? And I keep kind of saying the same thing. Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I'm trying to get over to crank out another episode. And, you know, this time it actually turned out to be accurate. Somebody had just mentioned it the other day. You know, it was all the way back in June 21st when I was covering the Worldwide Solstice Festival live that was my last episode. So, man, time flies. You know, just got a lot of things going on. Busy on the personal side of things. And hopefully, again, personal as well as work-related schedules permit me to get these shows out on more of a frequent basis, because I do miss it. It's funny, I do miss getting back here and talking, because I know, man, there's been a lot of people out there that have really come forward and said, hey, you know, I listened to the show and, you know, looking forward to the next one. And that means a lot. Means a lot. If you are out there, by the way, and you have any suggestions for future show topics, by all means, please send me an email at theeyepiece@gmail.com, and we'll go ahead and we'll kick around the idea for it. In fact, somebody had just said something last week, maybe the week before, with a show topic, and I might consider it. You know, I'm not a big astrophotographer. It was regarding some astrophotography software. But, you know, I might go ahead and check into that. But we'll see. But being that it's been a personally busy summer, and it has been one that has had some great opportunities for observing, I sure hope you've enjoyed the summer as well, getting out and enjoying, oh, the beauty of our summertime Milky Way and the summertime sky. I sure hope you have had the chance. Now, I want to go ahead and call out some objects that have stuck in my mind that I just thought have been very interesting, and I'll go ahead and share two of these with you just doing my Night Skies Network shows, if you will, out there and catching a few objects, and just thought that they were really pretty and would get out there and go ahead and ask you all to go ahead out there and get to observing them as well, because I think you might find it very, very interesting. Now, the first object, let me just bring up my image here, is going to be NGC 06. Now, this is going to be actually within M31, the Andromeda Galaxy. This might be a challenging object for you, but it's going to be pretty cool nonetheless. Okay? NGC 206 is actually a star region, a bright patch of stars within M31. And I was surprised at just how easy it was to see, at least using electronically assisted observing. That is, using my 8-inch scope and my Lodestar X2 camera for a brief 15-second exposure. Within those 15 seconds, I can clearly see the patches of stars referring to NGC 206. Now, the challenge here, if you are a visual observer, go ahead and try to catch this as well. I think if you use enough power and you use a night that has good transparency, you too might be able to visually nab the haziness of this patch within the Andromeda Galaxy M31. I just thought it was thrilling and very cool to know that this is something that you're seeing in a completely different galaxy. And again, I shared that live on NSN, and a couple of the folks that were on there participating on the chat, they too thought that was really cool. And I don't think somebody had shown that before. I like to get off the beaten path, if you will, and show things and see things for myself that maybe I have never seen. So it's really cool to go ahead and be able to share that. If you happen to catch that visually, hey, you know, I'd love to hear the observing port, the observing report, and I'll share that online. Go ahead and send it to theeyepiece@gmail.com. Now, our next object happened to have been a open cluster that I just thought was really, really pretty, particularly because this is made up of a number of dim stars and a number of bright stars. So the variance of brightness within the stars of this cluster is what I find very fascinating. Because, yeah, you can see the brighter ones, but it's a challenge to go ahead and pull out how many of these other dimmer ones that you can see. Now, this particular cluster is also located, I believe, in Perseus. This is NGC 1245. With the 8-inch Schmidt out back using the Lodestar X2 camera. Again, this is a brief 15-second exposure. Shared live on Night Skies Network there. And I thought it was just a very beautiful cluster. Fairly large at that magnification with that particular setup. There was a very cool little arc of stars, kind of like a C shape, that were very dim, easy to pull out though at 15 second exposure. So visually that might be something that you might find as a good kind of target or challenge to go ahead and tease out. But again, I like open clusters because, you know, light pollution affects kind of everything, but you still have the opportunity to nab some of these open clusters. I mean, it's not like galaxies where you have a very low surface brightness, and if you're observing from a, you know, light polluted region, you'll have less of an opportunity probably to nab galaxies than you would to go ahead and track down some of these NGC open clusters. So I thought that was really, really cool to go ahead and nail down. Yeah, we shared a couple of other galaxy clusters. You know, these things required about a 90-second exposures or even all the way up to 2-minute exposures. Had a wonderful shot of, calling it up here, I think it was the Cocoon Nebula. Had a wonderful shot of that. 90-second exposures. Really picked up some nice detail with that one. Also, the Iris Nebula. I don't think I'd seen that one before. And this was a session just a little while ago, September 13th on Night Skies Network, that I was doing. And I had just a great view. I mean, the weather this week here in Middle Tennessee has been absolutely fantastic. Now, of course, I say that, but last night, of course, being International Observe the Moon Night and Astronomy Day, Well, clouds. So that ruined an outreach event that we had down in Motlow College in Tullahoma, Tennessee, with Billy Hicks down there for his STEM outreach event. But, you know, we'll get to try something again, hopefully very soon. But weather-wise has just been absolutely spectacular for the last few days. I did have the opportunity to get out and do a little bit of observing, not as much as I would like just because I've been so busy with work. But, hey, you know, life happens, right? Now, that's nighttime stuff. So I sure hope you've been enjoying that as we are tailing into September. And we are saying goodbye to our summertime Milky Way objects and saying hello to our autumn and fall objects. What about what's been going on with the sun? Man, on the 16th? Yes, I think it was the 16th of September, a massive prominence was visible on the sun. And I sure hope you had the opportunity. I know a number of people on Facebook were kind of caught by surprise, me included, because frankly, I've been so busy with work that I just didn't have an opportunity or was too wiped out at the end of the day, frankly. But I had a mount that I wanted to get tested before the outreach event. So I said, let me go outside, put the solar scope on it, power up the mount that I use for outreach just to make sure everything is working. And I turned it to the sun, came in with the USB cable, and whoo, this was a massive prominence on there. So wow, very excited about that. It's still visible on the sun, of course, now as a filament, very large filament. But as of today, right now, checking out the Gong site for NASA and the Gong Hydrogen Alpha Network, which is halfa.nso.edu, by the way. The filament's there, but some very nice prominence activities going on. And don't think you white light observers out there on the sun are left out. Oh no, there are some great sunspots still visible on there. And it looks like a new one. As of right now, the recording here of on September 20th, we got a new sunspot group coming into view, not even numbered yet. So 2415 is still visible. That's been a very unstable active region for this whole week. That is still visible. We have 2418, which is a nice sunspot group there. It looks like it might be splitting into two spots. I'm not sure, so we'll check that out. 2419, very small current group, but just about midway point on the sun's disk right now. And approaching on the eastern limb right there, looks like they have circled a new sunspot active region coming in there. So some good things to go ahead and catch with that. Now, let's go ahead and get into some astronomical equipment because I always like to go ahead and talk about that. Now, remember a while back, Explorer Scientific, it was NEEF. Gosh, I think NEEF 2014 or maybe even 13. They had the Truss Tube Newtonian 1 in their trailer that they had brought to the NEEF show. European folks have had these available, I think, for a while. Guess what? They're here in the States now, and they look really sharp. These are ultra-light truss tube Dobsonians from Explorer Scientific 10, 12, and 16. The 10-inch is $699, the 12 is $999, and I believe the 16-inch... Give me 1 second to verify that. I don't want to give you the wrong quote here. I think it's $16.99. Really looks sharp, though. Black truss tubes with nice yellow. Stands out really nice and sharp. Nice yellow altitude bearing. I really like that. Half moon type of style altitude bearing. Okay, the 16 inch is $19.49. And right now they show it's in stock at Woodland Hills, at least. So, you have a new telescope offering out there if you're looking for an ultralight scope. Speaking of Dobsonians, I'll start off with some bad news, some sad news. Apertura, optics marked. Well, their Apertura scopes are no more, put it that way. OpticSmart, they're still hanging around. No more Apertura scopes. I think they're going to be liquidating and selling off the remaining inventory of accessories, eyepieces, smaller telescopes, etc. But I would imagine them to probably, you know, wrap it up to focus on some other business that they're doing. And, man, David at OpticSmart was a great guy. Loved the Aperturas. I loved his customer service. So did everyone out there because everyone was so bummed out to hear about it. But, hey, it's tough out there to be a small, relatively small vendor and trying to make it in the margins out there with scope. So sad to hear that OpticSmart's going. But if you want some deals, if you want some deals on some accessories and things going on, head on over to OpticSmart. They still have some things in stock and available and some things on clearance and liquidation, etc. So you might want to check that out, pick up those savings while they're there. All right? So definitely something to consider. Now, we'll get back to some other news, and I guess this is good news too. This is telescopes.com. They have brought back into selling some of these Zamels. For a while there, the Zamels were hard to come by, and they weren't available for a while, but they're back. And they also have some other models over there now, the Leeuwenhoek RA series scopes too. Those are Dobsonians as well. But anyway, if you're looking for a traditional tube Dobsonian, you have those options available for you there. Daystar. I got the Quark. I love it. And guess what? If you have a Schmidt, a Maksutov, or a refractor that's longer than F-15, you can go ahead and pick up one too. That's right. They have a Quark Hydrogen Alpha eyepiece specifically now for Schmidt's, Max, and refractors that have a longer focal length of F-15, or focal ratio, rather, of F-15. So you might want to go ahead and check out Daystar filters for more information on their new Quark Hydrogen Alpha eyepieces for that. I should have probably had this right next to the Explore Scientific, because I think they're kind of related. Yes, absolutely. Explore Scientific Bresser Exos-2 Go-To Equatorial Mount. Saw this at OPT Corp. This is a new offering, I think, from Explore Scientific, kind of an economical approach for a go-to equatorial mount. Very LXD75-ish. The Mead mounts kind of options there. CG5-ish, yeah. And it has an actually included, I believe, an included polar axis finder, which is nice to include. Looks like a completely proprietary hand controller kind of format. Nice large screen, though, on it. That was pretty interesting. 28-pound capacity, 30,000 objects in the database. Full go-to for their equatorial mount. So right now I show that is $579.99. They also have a non-go-to mount, same series, the Exos, for $399. I'm betting that you could probably purchase the go-to as an upgrade for the non-go-to model, although I don't see any pricing or options for that. It's just speculation on my part. But looking for an economical mount, that just might be up your alley. All right, now, no secret that I'm a big advocate for electronically assisted observing. ATIC Cameras has released an entry into electronically assisted observing, or electronically assisted astronomy, I guess is the proper way that everyone, I think, is trying to solidify on, with the ATIC Infinity Camera. That's right. I've seen some videos of this. By the way, go to my blog at theeyepiece.org or at theeyepiece.blogspot.com. You'll see one of the blog posts that I put up with a link to the video of this camera in action. I love the fact that they're putting up the camera live in action, at least from these recorded standpoints. I really think that they should go ahead and do a... I think this is a Google Plus Hangout that they're doing. If they're not doing a Google Plus Hangout, they should really try to consider that. Even see if they could do a Night Skies Network thing, and go ahead and do a live, maybe Q&A on the camera. That would be really kind of cool to see. But anyway, I digress. So let's talk about the camera in detail here. This is a Sony ICX825 chip uncooled camera that supports long exposure. Now, with a catch here, it is long exposure, but it does have a limitation, up to 2 minutes. Now, some folks on the forums have kind of said, hey, what's up with that? Well, I kind of understand that. Let's face it. They make long exposure cooled astrophotography cameras. So, really, for electronically assisted astronomy, you rarely kind of go probably over 2 minutes. And I think that's true for the most part. So, not a big deal, but I think I understand why they really didn't want to do something above 2 minute exposures with that. They are making their own software as well for this camera. So, it's interesting. And again, the video links that I posted up have that in action. It looks really nice, frankly. Right now, let's see if we have our links to that. I believe the camera right now suggested retail $995 for this particular chip. Yes, and of course it is a large chip. The 825 is what, $1,395 by 1064. So you're getting a pretty wide field of view. Now, is it as sensitive as the chip that's in my Lodestar X2? No, but you get a wider range with that. So just kind of keep that in mind. So that is the ATIC Infinity. Now, not to be undone, you know how much I like my Lodestar X2 and my Lodestar Live software. Starlight Express introduces the UltraStar Live Viewing Guider and Camera. Now, this thing looks exactly like a Lodestar X2, but nope, this is different. It's got an ICX825 chip in it as well. $1,395 by 1024 chip size. So, it does support long exposure. I don't see that it has a limitation thus far in its exposure time. Let's see. And it also comes with a tried and true piece of software. That's right, Paul Scheer's Lodestar Live ships with that particular camera. They think that this camera is going to be available by the end of August. Now, that being said, let's see what we can find out there for pricing on this particular camera, because I honestly have not found it yet out there for sale. But let's see what we got here. I see plan. Okay, yep, here it is. It OPT Corp has it listed. $995. Really no surprise, I think, there. Mini CCD monochrome and color. By the way, the ATIC camera too, I think, has a color option as well. So same price point there. So for you all that are into electronically assisted astronomy, as I am as well, your options just became pretty plentiful. We've done a number of talking about Mallencam's Sky Raider. That's been getting in the hands. We're seeing more and more folks out there very happy with their Sky Raider series monochrome, as well as the color camera there. Sky Raider Auto Guiders, by the way, that's been out for a little while. I might not have touched base on those too much, but if you head on over to Mallencam.net, Sky Raider Guider, Imagers, $199 for this guider. So that's a very affordable little guider. I have heard of some people using this too for live viewing. And I in fact, the images here up on the screen for the Mellencam Skyraider guider slash imager. It's interesting that they put slash imager. Has some M57 images right here. So interesting there for $199. Not bad. Not bad at all. So that's a 1280 by 960 viewing with a 3.75 pixel size. So that looks like a little, that looks like an interesting little camera. I might actually consider that one myself. I'm looking for maybe a possible color camera that's economical, not only for outreach, but also for some spectroscopy that I might be getting into. A little bit later on. But anyway, so that, oh, one more thing. One more thing here. I'm going to conclude this in the show notes. Just this week, I won't give his real name, but he's Astro Ed on Night Skies Network, just in case you didn't want me to do that. Ed had found or had shared this solar ruler, and it's really kind of cool. I'll give you the link on the show notes tab. And also, if you roll on over to Solar Activity, if you go to the files link under the Solar Activity Facebook page, Pamela put a link there too for that group. What basically this is, in a nutshell, is you have your you have an image of the sun with scales on it for distance and size, basically. Okay, you take an image of the sun, and you can overlay this image, scale it to the accurate diameter of your image itself, and you have an accurate way of measuring, you know, features on the sun. So that's pretty cool. So I also wanted to share that. I've actually was looking for something like that, and, you know, it's pretty neat to have that as well. So I'm glad to have being able to find that. I do have to make some changes and tweaks, etc., and brighten up the image to see it a little bit better, but it works. And, well, you want to get accurate measurements of your solar prominences and filaments, etc. That might be the way for you to go in an economical approach. Okay, let's go ahead and cover our main topic for tonight, and that is something special. It is the total lunar eclipse on the 27th of September, going into the wee hours of the 28th. Now, this is pretty significant. Number one, it's also occurring during a supermoon. Now, don't get your hopes too high for this supermoon. It's really just marginally larger. Yes, it's very close as far as to Earth. That's why it's called a supermoon. It will have a larger apparent size, but nothing really that you're going to be able to pick out. Now, September's full moon is also called the blood moon because it presents the fourth and final eclipse of the lunar tetrad, fourth straight total eclipses of the moon spaced at about 6 months apart. But one thing to remember here, and the reason why you want to catch this either personally or online, is it's the last total lunar eclipse until 2018. So enjoy it while you can. Simply put, an eclipse is when the moon passes into Earth's shadow, and it's directly opposite of the sun, and thus Earth casts a natural shadow. Now, you have to wait until specific times, just like this, September's equinox, when you have that chance of the moon passing into the shadow. And for North America, for the most part North America, we will get the total eclipse, especially the East Coast. Mountain and Pacific time, you'll have a little bit of moon rising while it's in a certain portion of the eclipse. But East Coast and Central, we got the whole shebang. So let's go ahead and cover. Now, the great thing about an eclipse is you don't need to go ahead and have and enjoy this with a telescope. A pair of binoculars actually would work great. Now, if you do use a telescope, remember, you don't want to go ahead and get zoomed in on this. You want a wide field so that you can see the entire moon in your eyepiece at once. So let's go ahead and talk about the specific times. Now, the penumbra first begins to be visible, and I'm going to give you universal time, and then I'm going to give you Eastern and Central time. So, penumbra is first visible at 12:40 universal time. That's 8:40 p.m. Eastern, 7:40 Central. Partial eclipse begins at 1:07 universal time. That's 9:07 p.m. Eastern and 8:07 p.m. Central time. Total eclipse begins at 2:11 universal time. That's 10:11 p.m. Eastern, 9:11 p.m. Central. Mid-eclipse point is at 2:48 universal time. That is 10:48 p.m. Eastern, 9:48 p.m. Central. Total eclipse ends at 3:23 universal time. That's 11:23 p.m. Eastern, 10:23 p.m. Central. Partial eclipse ends at 4:27 universal time. That's 12:27 a.m. on the East Coast. Central is 11:27 p.m. And the penumbra's last visibility is 4:55 universal time. That's 12:55 a.m. Eastern and 11:55 p.m. Central. So once again, this is well visible, weather permitting, of course, for East Coast Central time zone. Mountain folks will go ahead and get it. Moon will rise, partial eclipse, and of course the Pacific folks, total eclipse, they'll catch it when it's just about is starting its total eclipse point at 7 p.m. But looking forward to going in and sharing that online. I will be broadcasting, weather permitting, Night Skies Network, as well as probably doing a live Google Hangout maybe as well. We might try some different things for this particular one. So here's hoping that we have some clear skies, because the next one isn't going to be until 2018. So hopefully weather works out for you. All right, gang, that is going to be a wrap for this episode. I sure hope everyone has plenty of clear skies so that we can all talk about it next time here at The Eyepiece. Thank you for listening to this episode of At The Eyepiece. If you would like to participate in a future show as a featured guest, or perhaps you have suggestions for future show topics, send me an email at theeyepiece@gmail.com. Check out our blog at theeyepiece.blogspot.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Just put in a search for At The Eyepiece. I'd like to thank George Wood for his bumper and exit music. This is 8-Bit Junkie, and we obtained that from PodSafeAudio.com. So here's wishing all of you plenty of clear skies so that we can all talk about it next time at The Eyepiece.